This is June 15th, 1977. This is Marsha Brugman. This afternoon we're visiting with Irvin Axman at the Louisville Trust Building, Suite 1809. We're continuing our project on the oral history of the Parkland area and the Parkland residents. Mr. Axman, you're a past resident of the Parkland area. Can you tell me what year you were born? What was the date of your birth?
The date of my birth is February the 5th, 1927. I was born in New Albany, Indiana, but we resided in the West End at the time. Even though I was born there, I only lived there approximately 2 weeks. And then we returned to Louisville, where I grew up, and lived at 2225 Date Street for approximately 40 years.
Date Street?
Date, D-A-T-E.
What street?
Well, now that was right adjacent to, it's still Date Street. This was in a section called Delaney Section, which was the neighboring community right next to Parkland. But I have spent so much time in Parkland, I feel like I know a little bit about the Parkland area.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, going back to when you were born, why was it you were born in New Albany and yet you lived in...
Well, my mother was a native of New Albany. Her name was Zoller, and there were six children in our family. And the first three of us have the same story that I am telling. When it was time for us to be born, we just got in the car. My mother's physician was from New Albany. We drove across the K&I Bridge. I was born in the St. Edward's Hospital, which is no longer there, but is now the Provident Retirement Home next to the St. Mary's Catholic Church in New Albany. My mother and father were married in New Albany at St. Mary's Catholic Church.
So it was really the reason then was because her
Our family physician was in New Albany. My mother was native in New Albany. We were familiar with the hospital there.
Mm. Okay, so then the last three children she stayed over here in Louisville?
We're born here children at Norton's Hospital, 3rd and Oak Street.
Oh. So as soon as you were released from the hospital then,
we
returned to
Louisville. That's correct, right back home. That's correct.
What was your father's name?
August M. Axman.
Such unusual name. Okay, and what was his occupation?
He was an engineer for, at that time, was the Axton, A-X-T-O-N, Fisher Tobacco Company, which is now Philip Morris.
Oh, right. Oh.
At 18th and Maple Street.
And did your mother have a career outside the home?
No.
She raised six children.
That's enough
of a career.
That's her career.
Okay. Were you the oldest son?
I was the third oldest.
Third oldest. And what was it? How many boys?
Well, I have an older brother who is deceased. He's been dead 5 years, and I have one older sister. Well, there were four boys and two girls mm-hmm. in our family, mm-hmm. and I was the third oldest. I have an older sister and older brother.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where were you educated when you lived in the Delaney section?
When we lived in the Delaney section, I went to grade school at St. Benedict's Catholic School. St. Xavier High School for 3 years, and then when they opened Flagey officially for the senior class in 1945, the Archdiocese of Louisville transferred all the West End boys to Flagey to make up the senior class, and I was in the first class of Flagey in 1945.
Oh, wow.
We had 27 students in our class, and at the last reunion, which was about 3 years ago when they closed Flagey, mm-hmm. we had 20 of our 27 boys present for our last reunion.
Oh, you're kidding.
But we had 2,000 people at the convention mm-hmm. when we closed Flagey.
Oh, I bet that was heartbreaking when you're from the original class.
Well, really, it doesn't, because the school deteriorated and mm-hmm. they just weren't. In fact, they closed it too soon. Had we had busing, then Flagey would still be in existence mm-hmm. today. And then I attended the University of Louisville. Mm-hmm. My wife's a native from West End. She attended St. Benedict's Catholic School, Loretta High School, and Webster. She graduated from Webster Grove in St. Louis.
All right.
My wife also danced at the amphitheater for 5 years in the 50s. She was in the chorus for 5 years at the amphitheater when we had musicals out there. And a little bit more brief history about something on my mother's side of the family. I have an uncle who is now deceased from New Albany named Urban P. Zoller. Mm-hmm. And the people at the University of Louisville, especially in the music department, called him the maestro. And my uncle Urban was the largest private individual record collector in the Falls City area.
Oh my goodness.
When the 78s went out and 33s came into existence, my uncle got on the telephone and called our local free public library here on 4th Street, identified himself, told him that he would like to donate his entire collection, which consisted of between 50 and 75,000 records, to the library. They said we were not interested. He says, thank you. He hung up the phone. He called the seminary at St. Minor in Indiana and donated his entire record collection to the students up there who were said to be priests. He now is dead, but he still has a tremendous collection of 33s. Mm-hmm. He has some of the first, or had some of the first Crusoe prints that ever hit the market.
Who has the possession of them now?
His wife is still living. She has the 33 collection, but the 78s are at St. Minor, Indiana.
Can you ever imagine why the Louisville Free Public Library turned down?
He got hold of the wrong party. And in 1937, this man was a self-imposed perfectionist. He was a businessman, and he lost his entire collection in the flood in 37. He had records of every record that he had. This was all written up in our paper 15, 20 years ago, that he lost all of his collection in the 37 flood. He submitted all the records to the various publishing companies, and they reimbursed him free of charge because he was such a large collector. And it was a big promotional item for these RCA and Columbia, whoever the case might be.
Well, people lost in 37 but flood, I had no idea.
If you could have seen the way this man handled his collection, he wore white gloves. He dusted every record off before it was used, after it was used. My wife was taking a music course at Catherine Spaulding here in the 60s. She called my uncle, wanted to know if he had a certain opera. He said, yes. She said, may I come by to hear it? She said, yes. She said, Uncle Herb, I just want to hear the last excerpt of it. He says, either you hear it from start to finish or you don't hear it. But to see this man's collection was just a thrill in itself.
And he had documented records of everything that he had.
He had bookcases built in his den that were from floor to ceiling, that everything was in categories.
I've heard of him before, but I didn't know what the story behind his collection
was. I was named after my uncle. I inherited that name from Urban P. Zoller. That's correct. Mm. Hmm. He was owner and operator of the Ohio River Sand and Coal Company in New Albany. Mm.
Mm. You have an unusual family, there's no doubt about it. Now that was your brother.
That's my mother's side of the family.
Brother.
My father, people who were all from Louisville. They were business people. We had the Axman Restaurant at 4th and Market for approximately 20 years. That was my father's brother. He had another brother that was a tailor that had the same location on Jefferson between 3rd and 4th to the west of the New Albany Car Barn upstairs, and he had the same location for 50 years. Sam Meyer was on the opposite side, on the 3rd Street side, and my uncle Ed Axman, the tailor, was on the right-hand side, which is the 4th Street side. Of the old New Albany Car Barn, between 4th and 3rd on Jefferson. It ran through to Liberty Street.
How far back can you trace your family as Louisville residents?
I have never attempted to.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like long standing.
My father's people are from Germany, and we still have people living there in Wiesbaden. Mm. And up until the time of my parents' death, my parents corresponded with them. They would write my parents in German. We would take it out to one of the high schools and have it translated. My parents would write them in English. They would go to the library in Germany, in Wiesbaden, and have my parents' letters translated.
Oh, marvelous. Isn't that kind of lost?
Well, since the death of my parents, we've lost contact with them, yes.
Hmm. Tell me some about your growing up years. You know, reminisce some with me, if you can, about what the West End was like during that time. You're white. You're one of the few people that I've been able to locate who lived in the Parkland area
Well, now let me correct that. There again, I did not live directly in the Parkland, but I grew up in the Parkland area. Mm-hmm. There were so many things to do in the Parkland area. For instance, we have the Lowell Free Public Library at 26th Virginia. We spent a great deal of time there doing research for school, both on the elementary level and the high school level. Parkland Junior High School over at, I think it was 23rd and Wilson. It's not called Parkland anymore. I think it's called a middle school of some sort now. Mm-hmm. They had one of the most finest gyms in the city, and we had basketball leagues over there. On Saturday, there was a theater on Dumanil called the Parkland Theater. And it was just a few stores west of 28th and Dumanil. And Saturdays, for a nickel, we had double features there. And that was a big treat and a thrill for us back in the 40s. Yeah. And, the 40s, I would say, when I was going down there.
That theater, did that serve pretty much the western end of Louisville?
That served that particular area. But we had another theater at 18th and Oak called the Oak Theater, which actually served our area. It is now a church. The building still exists there, but it's a church mm-hmm. at 18th and Oak. But we also would go to the Parkland Theater, like on Saturdays for Nickel Day, and see a double feature.
Mm-hmm. Well, during the late 30s, early 40s, when you were growing up, was this a predominantly white area, all this section
100%.
Mm-hmm.
And the area west of Parkland was called Little Africa.
Mm-hmm. Right, I remember people talking about that term.
Right.
Okay, so when, so during the early 40s even, it was still white. When did it begin to shift?
Well,
then to a black population?
My parents lived on Date Street for 40 years at 2225. We were there in the 37 flood. I left the West End in 1959, and my parents remained there on Date Street approximately 3 or 4 years up to 63. And on their particular block there, they were one of the last three white families that sold on Date Street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Parkland, I think, if my memory holds me true, went black prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how soon, I just do not know.
Mm-hmm. It sounds from the way people have talked, you know, not only conversations that I've interviewed people, but just private conversations on the street as I've visited with people in the areas, it seems like it's just right around the early 50s there that the first few houses began to shift, and then toward the end of the 50s it was really quite predominant.
Another interesting thing about Parkland, due to the fact that there were so many different churches in Parkland, and I mean beautiful churches and nursing homes on both sides of Virginia from 26th to 28th, that Parkland was dry for a period of time.
No bars, nothing.
No alcohol served whatsoever. Now, you could buy near beer, but you could not buy whiskey or beer along that line.
Mm.
And due to the fact that it was such a religious community,
mm-hmm.
there were some beautiful churches there, beautiful homes on Virginia.
Oh, I know.
The most beautiful nursing homes up and down
they
Virginia.
They look like they must have been mansions, many of the homes that are still left.
Hardwood floor, spiral stairways. Fortunately, I've been in several of them, and I can vaguely remember things like that. Chandeliers hanging from the ceilings, and the alcove of the entrance of the building, and also in the dining rooms. But another thing, too, that I had mentioned to you, there was a dentist in front of that our family used for a family dentist. His name was Dr. Washburn, W-A-S-B-U-R-N. He owned a two-story building at 28th and Dumanil on the southeast corner, and I still, in my mouth, have a bridge that this dentist made for me in 1947. I still have this
yeah.
bridge in my mouth. Another interesting thing too, my father-in-law, whose name is Mr. Joseph Fisher, was the manager of the small AMP store in the block between, on 28th Street, between Virginia and Dumanil. Now this is in the year 1947. 36. Right across the street, directly across the street from this small neighborhood AMP store, AMP built a tremendous supermarket on the west side of 28th Street in the same block. My father-in-law was manager there, and in 1937, when the flood hit, they lost their entire stock. I'm not quite sure how much water was in the store, but my father-in-law made up his mind that if he was going to work that hard for the AMP, he was going to go in business for himself, which he did. He left AMP shortly after the flood in 37, as a young man about 20 or 22 years of age, bought an old neighborhood AMP store at 7th and Hill, and he remained in business there as an independent grocer for 35 years. He is now retired, still living.
7th and Hill, I wonder if that building is even still standing.
The building is still there. I had just recently...
Has a storefront looking?
Oh, AMP storefront. It's a yellow brick storefront, yes. It still has the old... If my memory holds me true, it's 1508 South 7th, and it's right south of 7th and Hill. On the corner, there's a medical office, Whitehead Drugstore, and then...
I know exactly where you're
the John Marshall School at the corner of the alley. That's closed. It's all boarded up. Mm-hmm. He's right to the right of that. That building still exists. That was one of these small neighborhood AMP stores. Mm-hmm.
And he's still alive today.
He's still alive today.
And he had that original business there at 28th and
Duvenau. He was the first manager for the new supermarket there in Parkland.
Mm-hmm. Because that's one thing from the people I can find who lived in the area, especially right around where the branch library is, at 28th and Duvenau, just immediately around there. Many of the people that lived there in the 40s and early 50s remark repeatedly how wonderful that shopping area was and how many things there were to do, and bank and jewelry store.
That's right, department store, bakeries, poultry house. I don't know if anyone had mentioned this to you, but the Oak Street streetcar would turn there at 28th and Virginia, there by the library, make a right-hand turn there. It would continue north on 28th Street to 28th and Greenwood. It would make a left-hand turn there and go west till Cecil Avenue. Mm-hmm. Cecil Avenue, it would make a left-hand turn, and there was a turn around the old fairgrounds down there at Cecil and whatever it is down there.
What used to be the old state fairgrounds.
The old state fairgrounds, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And the Oak Street car used to have that first turn around down by the old fairgrounds, and it would turn there 28th and Duvenau. I rode that streetcar many a time going to the fairgrounds.
How much did it cost? What was the last price you remember?
Oh, gee. I'm going to say a nickel, maybe. A nickel or a dime, something like that.
Now, your Dr. Washburn, the dentist, was right there in that area, too, that shopping center area, too, wasn't
that
he?
That is correct. Okay. He did not live there. He owned a two-story building there that he had the ground floor rented out to commercial tenants. He had his dental office on the second floor.
What else do you remember about that immediate area in terms of recreation? What other kinds of things? Well, you mentioned a teenage club.
Well, yes, but now this was up at the corner of 26th and Virginia. And I believe that Parkland actually went that far. And there was a teenage club, now I'm going back to the 50s, early 50s. It was called Gremlin, G-R-E-M-L-I-N, Corner. It was property owned by a church there. Whether the building still exists today or not, I do not know. But it was a tremendous big auditorium with a stage. We had dances and various activities there to have something for us to do rather than run the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in those days, not many of us had automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in my class of 27 students at Flagey, my senior class, two students out of 27 had cars back in 1945.
I bet they were really considered.
Well, they were considered
wealthy and lucky.
That's right. The fortunate.
Mm-hmm. So you went to this teenage club quite frequently.
That's correct.
Then the fairgrounds was in the air. Were there any other amusement parks or anything going in the West End area at that time?
Only Fountain Ferry.
Fountain Ferry. Well, was it going?
Well, that was in its peak then. That was at its peak. We used to pedal our bicycle from our neighborhood to Shawnee Park. We would play baseball at Shawnee Park. After the ball game, we would take our swimming trunks along. We would pay an admission charge to the Fountain Ferry Park, and then we would swim for a nickel over on Nickel Day. And after a swim, we'd pedal back to our neighborhood.
Was it an amusement park in that it had Ferris wheel and all this business that it did before it burned down?
It was strictly a wonderful amusement park. Picnic area. Tremendous picnic area there on the grounds itself.
Such a pretty park.
We had a skating rink right there, which was adjacent to it. The Fountain Ferry Skating Rinks, which was also part of the complex there. That was quite an entertainment place for us.
Do you remember at all what it cost to get into Fountain Ferry? Would you have any idea?
I'm going to say a nickel. And then they had coupons. If you, so many of the, like Coca-Cola or John G. Epling was sponsored, you cut the coupon out and that would be your admission to the park. Mm-hmm. Providing, for instance, like Coca-Cola Day or something like that.
Did you have to pay then extra, like with Walt Disney World, you can get coupons ahead of time to pay for your rides, or like Kings Island in Cincinnati,
well,
you pay one fee and then you can just ride everything.
That was not the setup then. The procedure then was you paid a cashier for every individual ride. Mm-hmm. And then you would get in the line and then pass your ticket to
the... It's kind of like the old state county fair type things.
That's
things
when
you pay for each ride. But still, I wish things cost that nowadays.
Well, the 37th flood was quite interesting. As I mentioned, we lived on Date Street. And it was very fortunate for us that in our particular block between 22nd and 23rd, our property was very, very high there. To give an example how high it was, we had 8 steps from the sidewalk to the first level, 4 steps from the first level up to the porch, and the water got to the top step of our porch. We had water in the basement up to the rafters. We had no water in our house whatsoever. Due to the fact that my father was an employee of the old Axton Fisher Bucket Company, he was worried about us, and he stayed over there to help guard the place from looting, that we went over there and stayed and slept on tobacco logs. And then there was a rumor circulating that they were going to quarantine the place and split the families up. My father smuggled us out one morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning. He had access to a boat, and we went home and stayed at our house the rest of the flood. And my parents cooked on a grate, which was a fireplace in our living room. We were the second family that ever lived in our house. Dr. Miller built our house, and my parents purchased it from him, and they remained there 40 years.
Did a lot of neighbors immediately around you lose quite a bit of property and things in the flood?
Yes.
So,
on our block in particular, as it went down towards the 22nd, 23rd, the low part, people had 10, 15, 20 feet of water in their houses.
Mm. I can imagine what it would do, just furniture alone,
that's
alone,
right.
Carpets.
The Red Cross did a tremendous thing about helping people get reestablished.
Mm-hmm. How many days did it last that you all were?
I just don't remember. I just do not remember. Professor Tom Owens, I think, would be a wonderful man to contact regarding that.
The West End pretty much, or the 37 flood pretty much affected the West End like the tornado did the East
That's
End
correct.
Recently.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. We could walk to 22nd and Date and look north on 22nd Street, and we could see the water approaching us day by day.
Wow.
We could just see the water coming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Someone mentioned to me the other day, and I can't remember for sure what period, whether this was the 30s, 40s, or early 50s, but it mentioned something about a White City Park or something like this in the West End. Do you remember?
Well, there was a park in our neighborhood, the Delaney section, called Victory Park.
Which Vickery?
Victory, V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. It still exists. It's at 22nd in Kentucky. It goes to Greenwood. And 23rd, both Kentucky and Greenwood. It's an entire city block long. And that was quite a drawing attraction. We had softball, volleyball, paddle tennis. We had a wading pool there. And it was quite used by the residents, both parents and that, because we had programs. The Parks and Recreation Department did a tremendous job back in that time trying to entertain us. Let's face it, we didn't have television then. Not many of us had automobiles. So consequently, we had to look for things to entertain ourselves. It's not like today where you get in a car and go somewhere.
Yeah, right. There's some things to be admired about the way it was then.
That is correct.
Yeah,
that is correct.
Of course, your family was obviously Catholic. You had a whole series here of Catholic institutions that you attended. Was it a very, when it was a white community, the West End, was it a very large Catholic community?
I would say definitely not. No, I would say there was an even percentage of various denominations. Mm-hmm. The Parkland area, for instance, there were no Catholic churches in Parkland. St. Benedict's at 25th and Osage was the only Catholic church in our neighborhood, both Delaney Section and Parkland. St. George at 18th and Standard, and then Holy Cross at 32nd and Broadway were the closest churches to the Parkland area. And that was quite a distance.
St. Benedict's was the church that your family belonged to.
That is correct.
And then the grade school that you attended.
That is correct. My wife attended school there.
You met her in the Parkland area?
No. I knew my wife from 21 years before I married her. We knew each other from grade school. I was 3 years ahead of her. She has one brother who is a priest here in town. His name is Father Donald Fisher. He was a year behind me. Went to seminary after a couple years of high school. He's pastor of St. Augustine Church, 13th and Broadway. But my wife and I met on a blind date, and we dated for a year. And
what year did you get married?
1959.
And that's when you moved out of the West End area?
That is correct. That's correct.
Can you remember any other kind of special things about growing up in the West End area, or particularly any experiences that you had in the Parkland area? It's kind of...
Other than the fact that I had so many friends from down in that area that went to school with us at St. Benedict's, that we there was a field down there that we played baseball in. Incidentally, there's quite a celebrity from Parkland too. Well, there are actually two. Pee Wee Reese is from Parkland area. And also Gene Rhodes, who is quite a celebrity here in town. He was general manager of the Kentucky Colonels basketball team. He was coach of the Kentucky Colonels basketball team. He coached at St. Xavier High School. Gene, likewise, well, Gene lived at 1333 Olive, if my memory holds me true. I used to spend a great deal of time down his house. He's also from St. Benedict's. And Pee Wee Reese, quite sure is from the Parkland area. Mm-hmm. After they moved here from Brandenburg, I believe is where his family's from originally. But those two men grew up in the Parkland area. They actually lived in the Parkland area because Olive is right there in Parkland. But I spent a great deal of time in Parkland. I mentioned the library, the theater, my dentist was there. And we had so many friends down there that we would visit, you know.
Of course, your parents, what year did your parents die? How many years have they been dead now?
Approximately 3 years.
And did they stayed until about 1963?
That's correct. And I sold their house there in 63.
Mm-hmm. Where did they move after that?
They moved to an apartment in Shively.
Oh.
And both of them died and were buried from St. Helens Catholic Church in Shively.
Mm-hmm. Were they already beginning to see the changes in the Parkland area in 1963? What was happening? What can you remember?
Well, the neighborhood was just deteriorating, and the people who were buying the houses were not keeping up with the houses, and that condition still exists today. When I drive by our piece of property on that we lived on Date Street, it's sickening to see the condition, how it's run down condition.
What do you think some of the reasons are for that? Is it just that the cost of living has gone so high that many of these large homes, people just cannot take care of them?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's just a lack of determination and will to take care of your investment. A piece of property is an investment. Most people buy one, it's the largest purchase of your life, and most people buy one house a year. I mean, one house in a lifetime. There are exceptions, but without generalizing, the percentage-wise, that it's definitely your largest investment. And when you invest money in something that large, consequently, it's going to take a little hard work to keep it up. We had a tin roof on our house. We would paint the tin roof every so many years. We painted our house every 3 years. The grass and flowers, we just took care of the landscaping. But I just don't know if they didn't. I can't say that's true for all the black people, because there's some wonderful black people that I have working for me and a lot of people I know, but they take pride in it. But we have some whites who don't take pride in their property, too. I think it's basically it's a lack of pride.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you get into that because of the class, not necessarily the race. You know, the class of people.
I believe you're correct in saying that. And I would definitely agree with that. More so the class than the race, because like I mentioned, you have whites who do not want to take care of their property.
You know exactly what you're talking about in terms of investment and just cosmetic care for the outside of a house, right. This kind of thing. I think that's the heartbreaking thing about a lot of the older black residents who moved in the early 50s, who still maintain beautiful homes. And it's really an effort, a financial effort and a physical effort for them. They're elderly. But they mention the same kind of things, and they're sickened by the houses that are being boarded up around them. Or, too, the absentee landlord kind of thing, where a number of people bought up those big houses, divided them up into apartments, and are just renting them to anybody. And it's really a problem. In the early 1960s, well, you left in 1959, then your parents stayed till 1963. So the properties were beginning to deteriorate. Was there already beginning to be a problem with break-ins?
Definitely. Juvenile delinquents, people afraid. My parents were quite well up in age, and of course they were afraid most of the time. They were being by themselves. They had no one to defend them. My father was in a wheelchair for 19 years, and had only one leg, and of course he couldn't defend himself, much less defend himself, as much less my mother. But I was very grateful that they consented. I had quite a time persuading my father to sell.
Yeah, after they'd been there that many years,
right.
Imagine it was heartbreaking.
And going from a home to an apartment was, especially at that age, was a tremendous change in their life.
Can you remember what kind of a role the churches played in that area of town? Well, in terms of your own family. Of course, you can't compare it with the churches in the area today because you don't live in the area today, but can you remember any special activities or any special meaning that the churches seemed to have for families in those days that they maybe don't, you suspect they might not have today?
Yes, I definitely see a tremendous.
Okay, I think as we were running out of tape on the first side, I'd ask you the question about what the churches meant in those days in the area.
My particular viewpoint on that, on this particular question, I feel as though the churches meant more to the people as a community. There was more participation in all the religious churches. You could drive by and see a tremendous amount of people, cars parked to attend the services. There was so much going on. Of course, bear in mind, back then we did not have the activities. Today we have so much interference that our attendance is off, whether it's due to the fact that the service is not there, and you hear the story that there's nothing there, I get nothing out of the service. Well, I don't believe in that, because you only get out of what you put into it. If you're not going to participate, you're not going to get anything out of it. But a church really made, all the churches made up a tremendous impact on the community. People really attended the churches then. There was more devotion in all the churches, I think, than there is nowadays. Whether that was good or bad, I don't know. We've seen an awful lot of changes in all of our religions. Some of them are good, some of them are bad.
Were there a lot of youth groups, Sunday potluck suppers, activities outside of the
correct.
Religious services?
Social affairs. And actually, it was had church picnics. We used to go to down on Cane Run Road, down around Lake Greenland, there was a picnic area that we used to have a family picnic, and it was well attended by just hundreds of people in the particular parish. And I'm sure the other churches had various things, along that line too.
Was there ever any question?
Okay.
Was there ever any question with your parents that you would not attend church because you had other things to do?
Definitely not.
See, I wonder if that definitely is not. The difference now.
Oh no.
We give children the option.
We were told to go to church on Sunday, and now. So many people find excuses not to attend church on Sunday. Fortunately, our two children, we have a son that's a senior in high school and a daughter that's a freshman in high school. Both of them attend church with us. We don't force them to go, but they go with us.
Well, I'm afraid we're running out of time, but you've certainly offered me an awful lot in terms of what the area was then, and you obviously enjoyed it, and I think it came across in the interview.
Well, it was a wonderful area to live in. The entire West End was just a tremendous, wonderful area to live in. And I don't care who you talk to, people who have lived in the West End in the early years, like I was fortunate to, I think you're going to find the same reaction. One of the most friendly places you've ever lived.
It must have been almost like a small town within itself.
It was.
Because I meet people who knew people that lived really way across the West End from each other, but they had contacts with each
That's
other.
Correct. Remember? Shawnee Park, how that park was used. At one time, Shawnee Park had 21 baseball diamonds in it.
Oh, you're
21
kidding.
Baseball diamonds. You had to get permits to even not only have leagues on Saturdays and Sundays, but you had to get permits to practice baseball during the week.
They were that busy.
It was that highly used. You would have to go to the recreation department, pick up a permit, and they would give you a piece of paper, a printed piece of paper, authorizing such and such a team to have the diamonds between 5 and 7, or whatever the case might be. And you had to show that permit. And Shawnee Park, it was so strict that the police patrolled the park. If you took your shirt off and you were bare from the head down to the waistline, they would stop and tell you to put your shirt on.
You're kidding.
We were permitted to wear shorts, and you could go barefooted, but you had to have clothes on.
It was the code of behavior then.
That was correct.
That was really watched.
But that day is gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.